episode 103 of the Veg Grower Podcast. My name's Richard. Today's date is the 13th of February 2017. Today's title is How I Grow Chilies, which basically means coming up today, I've got a few updates, and then I'm going to talk a little on how I grow one of my favourite plants to grow chilies. And then I've just got a little bit of comments on last week's news article, which was about the storage of tomato ketchup. So the weekend's been pretty cold, but I can safely say it didn't really stop me. Saturday morning, I went down the allotment and I placed cardboard and manure into the bed that originally had carrots and parsnips growing in. This is on obviously the original half. And that was what I called bed five. I need to get a bit more manure, another three binfuls, I'd say. But then that bed will be ready for peas and beans to go in. Already has the peas and the boar beans in there that were overwintered. And they're doing okay. They're growing pretty good, actually. I then went on to the newer half of the plot and started just clearing the top half. It had the black plastic down. You may have seen in the videos before. And that had a load of mud where the sweet potatoes were growing. So I've just cleared that. I actually found two flower pot saucers under there, which I've put to one side. I'll give them a good clean and probably end up using them at some point. Now, as I said, this path had black plastic laid down, which has acted as a very good weed suppressant. But I have noticed when it's wet, it is quite slippery, so that may have to be removed. I tried hoeing quite a few of the beds, but because the soil's so wet, it's very sticky and the hoe's just getting blocked up far too quickly. This was included. I tried hoeing more of a raspberry bed with my hand hoe. I really got stuck in, actually, and done quite a bit. So it's looking a lot better. The trouble is, because it is so wet, the soil, the clay, is just getting stuck. I did note that the rhubarb is actually really starting to grow now. So it's got through the winter. I'm going to have far too much rhubarb this year, but I can't complain. I then went into the brassica bed and I've basically removed the Brussels sprout plants. I had some decent sized Brussels sprouts on the plants, but birds are just attacking them. Pigeons and stuff, I think, are just eating the leaves and stuff. And they're getting to the end of their usable time, so they were to go. Now, I have to admit, I did video a bit of a walk around the allotment, which will be up on Thursday, if that's of interest to you. That afternoon, I went home and that sycamore has been chopped down. It's laying in a pile in the lawn at the moment. All but basically the bottom 2 foot. The main trunk of it has gone. Just got the bottom 2 foot, which I need my bigger chainsaw to get. I ended up last week buying a electric stick pole saw. Only a 750 watt, didn't have a big blade, it's just for pruning really, but it meant I could get up high to the branches that I couldn't reach, get those down, and then when the trunk came down it didn't bring anything else down with it. I have to admit, I've already noticed the light is coming in more already. Sunday morning was spent in the potting shed, and I started potting on the aubergine, the kales and the tomatoes, as well as the last few onions. That's opened up the space for me quite a bit, which I'm pleased to say. It's getting things growing a lot better. Although I'm still waiting for the greenhouse to warm up a bit so I can start getting some onions and stuff in there. Although the sweet peas, I don't normally talk about flowers. I don't really grow flowers, but I did sow some sweet peas just to aid a few things. They're starting to germinate, so they're going to hopefully go into the greenhouse pretty soon, which will open up a bit more space. All the potatoes are now in the potting shed in my trays and ready to chit. I've taken them out the bags, placed them in there, ready to go. I then sowed a few seeds. Now, the first one I done was some banana seeds. I actually soaked these in water inside the night before, so they were ready to go. And I've sown those in my normal way and into the heated propagator. And we'll see if we can get these bananas growing through the winter. I mean, I don't think I'll actually get some fruit off them, but I'm going to try. I then sowed some cucumber, a variety called Market Moor, which is quite a popular variety. And then some strawberries, a variety called Temptation. Now, the strawberry, the seeds were very small, so I just sprinkled those on top of the surface. Whereas the cucumber, they're quite big, and I just slotted them, pushed them into the container, into the compost, and they're good to go. That being said, I checked on the seedlings that I potted on this evening before I started recording, and after I'm recording, going back out there again, I perhaps didn't give them enough water because they looked a little limp. So I've given them a good watering again. I'm going to check on them in a bit and check on them tomorrow morning. Okay, so let's talk about chilies or chili peppers. Now, I love spicy food, so try and grow chilies of different heats each year. I even go to the chili fiesta every year at West Dean, which I quite often talk about. It's one of my favourite events. I will be adding a link to for the chili fiesta into the show notes if anybody's interested, but you can also go back through my website and find more details and things I've been to from the chili fiesta, photos and what have you. Now, chilies, they originate from Mexico, and many cultivars have spread throughout the world. Recent research shows that chilies were first domesticated more than 6,000 years ago. I believe the Incas used to eat them with chocolate, which is why Chilean chocolate is so well known. They spread across the South Americas, and Christopher Columbus first encountered them in the Caribbean when he discovered that part of the world. They were first brought back to Europe in 1493 by Christopher Columbus' physician. And from there on, Christian monks discovered that their pungency offered a substitute for black peppercorns, which were so costly at the time they were considered a currency, much like the pound or the dollar. In certain countries, yeah, they were that valuable, black peppercorns. Of course, when they were brought back to Europe, they soon spread to Asia, which obviously Asia has a lot of chilies involved in their cooking. And this was probably through the Portuguese sailors and things. Now, we all know chilies can be very hot. Their intensity of the hot is measured in Scoville heat units, which is basically a measure of chili extract becomes undetectable to a panel of tasters when it's mixed in sugar syrup. So they'll probably drop of a chili extract in this sugar syrup and taste it. And then as they dilute it more and more until they can taste it, the more dilution it has, the higher the Scoville units. I believe that if something's rated at 1 million Scoville units, it's one part chili to 1 million parts sugar syrup. The heat is actually from a chemical called capsaicin, which is the primary component in pepper spray. Capsaicin binds heat receptors on the tongue and throats, which tells the brain it's eaten something hot. And that gets the brain to tell the body, right, release endorphins, increase perspiration and heart rate, which is why we get the effects. Interestingly, the release of the endorphins is like an addict to certain people, or an addiction to certain people. So it's why some people will love chilies, including myself. Naga chilies are generally the hottest, with the Carolina Reaper currently the hottest known chili. Although new breeds are always being involved, a few years ago it was the Dorset Naga that was the hottest chili. So, and that was an English one. And so it's as the breeders develop these more and more hotter chilies, they're obviously trying to get the hottest chili and outcompete others. So that's a little bit on of the history and a bit on the chili peppers. I'll be adding a link to a resource in a show notes if that's of any interest to you. But then how I grow chilies. Now I start sowing the seeds as early as mid-January in a heated propagator in the potting shed. Generally, they can be sown as late as March or April, but a longer growing season really works better for them. Seeds sown are sown in a sowing compost, like most of my seeds I do, and then placed in a heated propagator with vents closed. Within about a week generally, sometimes longer, they germinate. I've got some at the moment that I sown 2 weeks ago, maybe three, and they haven't germinated yet. So I'm waiting and seeing, but I'm going to sow some more this weekend and compare them and see how they do. Once they've germinated, I'll then move them into my other propagator that has the vent open so the moisture doesn't build up and kill off the seedlings. They'll be in this propagator for about a week, and then the pot will come out and placed on top of the propagator, so they're still getting that bit of heat for about another week again. At this point, they're generally pricked out and put into single pots to grow on their own. Now, currently, I'm using these. There was from Poundland. They're like cardboard, and you get 12 per sheet, little square cardboard pots. I've used those up at the weekend to pot them up on into. Now they're used up, they'll be going into my Hacksnix root trainers because they are awesome. Yeah, so now they're pricked out, which is basically just pot them in into individual pots on their own. They'll grow on into in the potting shed until the greenhouse is warm enough, probably a week or two depending on the weather in the green and how hot the greenhouse is. I like to try and keep the greenhouse at 15 degrees most of the time when they go out into the greenhouse, so it's difficult to judge, but probably beginning of March is when they can start really going into the greenhouse. The potting shed is just that, because it's smaller, it's just that little bit warmer for some reason. And so they grow quite well in there. So as these seedlings are growing, I try and water them daily if possible, but it's a case of looking at the compost and seeing if it needs it. It's a difficult one to judge, but or difficult one to teach, but you just kind of know. You just look at it. But obviously at this point I continue potting on and watering as much as required with a feed. Now at this point you're looking more for a nitrogen feed, so my homemade nettle feed would be what I use. Once they're ready to plant out, now some of mine will go in a greenhouse, which they can be planted in the beds about April time. Some, the ones that are going to be grown outside will be planted out in May after going off a hardening off period. Now, how I harden them off, I pop them in a cold frame with a lid, the top open for a week or two. And I try and just knock them about a bit, gently knock them about so as if they're getting blown around with wind. Then when they're ready to be planted in the soil, again, around May, May the 10th roughly, they'll be planted outside. Now, some can go into pots, some will go into soil and what have you. And obviously, there's the ones in the greenhouse. Obviously, when I first plant them, I've got to water them daily to try and make sure that they settle in, they take to the growing position. But once they're settled in, chilies like it on the dry side. So you might not water every day, perhaps every couple of days, or once a week, depending on once the soil just looks that bit dry, that's when to water them. I try and feed them every 2 weeks. I've used a tomato feed like you would buy from a shop very successfully. Now I've got a wormery, I tend to use my wormery feed, which works wonders. Up to anybody else what they do there, but tomato feed really does work as well. It's high potash, which is what you want. Now, obviously, as I said, water when the soil is just starts to dry out, and it's rumoured to give better results for chilies. After all, they do originate from a hot, dry environment, so you're mimicking their natural environment. Flowers will be produced, and as long as insects pollinate the flowers, the fruits will grow. I've never taken a paintbrush and tried to pollinate them myself. Just let them grow and let the insects do it. Bees and things, what have you. Never had to take a paintbrush and go from flower to flower. The fruits are hottest when they are young and green, depending on the variety. But left to mature is when you get the red chilies and the nicer tasting chilies. I like to pick the first load off that are green for the hot chilies, and then that encourages more chilies to grow. And then you get a later crop, and I like to leave those to mature to their final redness and what have you. Outside, I've generally found they've lasted as late as November without being attacked too much with the frosts. However, I am down in the south, and we do get a later frost here. You can overwinter chilies, and I've got one in the greenhouse that I've managed to do it last year with, well, this coming year. And basically, this will be one I have in pots. Try and do it a bit before the frost, so probably October time. Trim back all the leaves, take off all the fruits, trim it back to say your stem, and then bring that pot in and try and keep it warm and watered over the winter. I've left mine in the greenhouse. It's got chilies on it at the moment. It's doing great. I'm going to leave it, and hopefully this year it will grow even better and should, in theory, give me an earlier crop of chilies. Now, obviously, there's many, many uses in the kitchen, including curries and pickles, etc. There's far, far too many to list. But recipes that I'll be producing later on in the year on the website will definitely include chilies. I can tell you that much now. I'll be doing curries and things like that. However, the fruits themselves, they can be dried. I've done them in a dehydrator very successfully. Some people make a masata, which is basically a load of chilies on a string hanging up, and they dry very successfully like that. Very simple. I may make one of those later on in the year, and I'll try and do a video on how I do that. The fruits can also be frozen. Done that, and I've got some from 6-7 years ago still in the freezer, and they're perfectly fine and edible. You won't be eating them raw as such, but once they've defrosted, they'll probably go a bit mushy, but they grow fine in chopped up things. Going back to the dried ones, something like cayenne, when you dry them, they can be used for chili flakes and chili powder. Jalapenos are an example of a chili that can also be pickled in vinegar really easily and tastes really good. Well, my favourite chilies, now these are going to be my items of the week, so there'll be links on the website to Saturn Seeds to buy the seeds. I've got Numix Twilight, a small bushy plant, but they're quite a small chili fruit that's produced, but wonderful different colours from purple, orange, yellow, green and red. They're quite attractive. If you've got a patio, they go really well on there. Jalapenos, as I've just said, great for pickling. A green chili, medium heat, pickled. I cut them up and then pot them in a can with or a jam jar with vinegar. That's then preserved. That's all I have to do with them. I sprinkle them on from having a Mexican with nachos or anything like that. They go great with cayenne, a red chili with, I say, a medium heat. Some may say hot. When they're dried, they can be crushed for chili flakes or ground up into a powder to make chili powder for the spice cupboard. Scotch bonnet, another one of my absolute favourites, a hot one. But these are great for Caribbean dishes such as, the name escapes me right now. I can taste it right now. Jerk chicken, that's it. Jerk chicken. Really good marinade, great for barbecues, providing you like heat, of course. It's not to everyone's taste, see, but I love it. So what about you out there listening in? How do you grow your chilies? Why don't you let me know in the comments or email? As always, I love to hear from you. So last week's news article, it was quite interesting, actually. It was about the storage of ketchup. Now, I heard this on the news and I kind of thought, how the bleep is that news? And then I discovered there was a shop in an Asda store that started selling the tomato ketchup from the fridge. And some people had taken to Twitter and it led to a huge debate about whether or not where people store the tomato ketchup. It was really quite interesting seeing people's comments because some said they kept it in the fridge, some said they don't. Led to a massive debate. Now, personally, I've never kept my shop-bought tomato ketchup in the fridge. It's always been in the cupboard. However, when I've made my own, I have felt it lasted longer in the fridge. I would have thought it was fine to keep in a cupboard. It's never done me any harm, and I thought the combination of the vinegar and the tomatoes would act as a preservative. But when I read the article, and I mentioned this in my notes, there was a scientist that basically said nowadays there's less salt in tomato ketchup, and that affects the preservation technique. When tomato ketchup was originally invented years and years ago, refrigeration didn't exist, so it was invented as a preservation technique. But now they don't add as much salt. The scientists who have all the equipment to test these things out, so I can't really argue with it, say it's best to keep in a fridge. Okay, so that's it for this week. Not quite as long as last week, I'm noting the time, but it's still quite long in example. But thank you very much for listening. I'd love to hear from you. If you've got any comments or anything you want to add, please let me know, either in the comments or in the email. I will always get back to you, and I'll try and communicate as I can with you. Don't forget, if you want to be on the show, get in touch and we can set up a Skype interview. We can have a bit of a chat about your garden and how you like to do things. I'd love to hear from you. Really want to do my first interview with that, because I think it'd be fascinating, and it won't be anything difficult. You won't have to do anything other than talk. So get in touch, and I'd love to set that up. And as always, if you want to support the work that we do here at the Veg Grab Podcast, you can support us by doing your shopping through on Amazon by clicking on the link on the website. First of all, it doesn't cost you any more. All it does is provides us with a bit of commission that we can then plough back into the show. So until next week, I'm not sure what I'm going to talk about yet, but if anybody's got any ideas, get in touch as well. Until next week, thank you very much for listening, and I'll speak to you again.